When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to the Gravity Podcast, where we host conversations on developing a Christian spirituality rooted in love that fosters resilient faith in everyday life.
Happy podcast drop day. This is the day the podcast drops. It, depending upon when you're listening to this, I think it's like an evergreen. It just drops when you listen. I'm Matt Tebbe.
Yeah.
And this is Ben Sternke and Christy Penley, also the voices you'll hear in a moment. Hello.
Yes. Hello.
Hello. Yes. Yes. Good.
We're recording this on Memorial Day, and it's the kind of official beginning of summer.
Woohoo!
I'm really excited.
I love summer.
Yes, it is. Here in the USA.
Which I will not be in the USA when you hear this tomorrow. I'm going to the Dominican Republic, flying out at midnight tonight, y'all.
Oh, my goodness, Christy.
15 high school kids. Y'all pray for me.
In the TR. Goodness gracious. Yeah. All right.
It's going to be great. I'm so excited.
Yeah.
So
I'm sure you are.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Well done. Kudos.
That's awesome. Well, at the end of the summer, Ben and I are going to be at out where you are, Christy. We're going to be there in October.
Yes.
And hanging out. Woo-hoo. For something called Theology Beer Camp. You know what that is?
Yeah, tell me about that, because I actually don't know what it is. you drink beer and talk about theology?
The beer is like a peripheral part of it. I think it's more marketing than you know, anything else. But Ben, why don't you give her the 411?
Well, yeah, we got invited to be one of the podcasts, one of the featured podcasts. There's a bunch of podcasts and podcast hosts that join in this kind of conference, this gathering. It's called Theology Beer Camp. I think Homebrewed Christianity and Trip Fuller put it on. I don't know how many years it's been going, but basically it's a big gathering to kind of talk. It tends towards the theological,
yeah.
I think. A little academic, a little nerdy. But we tend in that direction as well on this podcast. And so if that's your inclination, you might really enjoy joining us in, where is it? Highlands Ranch, Colorado, which is a suburb of Denver.
That's right.
October 17th through 19th. I'm really excited about some of the keynote speakers that are going to be part of this, which Ilia Delio, is that how you pronounce her name? She's going to be there. Brian McLaren's going to be there. Diana Butler Bass is going to be there. A bunch of other folks, and a bunch of other podcasts. And so I think they said they've got at least like 300 people already registered for this thing.
That's
and
awesome.
So I don't know what kind of attendance they're looking for, but we're really excited about it. So
can you tell me how much it is?
I think so. I think you actually get, so right now there's an early bird discount.
Okay.
I think that's only until June 1st, though. So hopefully you're listening to this podcast episode before June 1st, friends. But you also get, and it's $250 to join right now. But I think actually, if you use our code, we have a code for this as well. And it's the code is Gravity Hobbit.
For real? Gravity
it
Hobbit?
It is. Gravity Hobbit. We did not decide on this. That was the code that was assigned to us because that gives you a flavor for how kind of nerdy and weird this gathering is going to be. If you go to, so you can go to register, you'd go, we've got a link on our website that takes you to the registration page, and that's gravitycommons.com/theologycamp. So gravitycommons.com/theologycamp. If you go there and you register and then you use our code GravityHobbit, you can kind of see like it's got Trip Fuller dressed up as like a hobbit. anyway, so there it's very nerdy
and
all that kind of thing. But if you use our code, I'm just trying it here on the website now, there is, yes, you get $25 off registration if you use our code. So,
okay, can I just throw out an idea? And you guys can, sure. Like, we didn't actually talk about this before recording.
This is live. Yeah.
So, if there's like a bunch of Gravity friends and we're all in Denver, like, yes. Can we put on the thing, like, hey, we're going to meet at this place for,
heck yes.
I don't know. Like, and then yes. Have like a little Gravity gathering.
Yep. Yes. Okay,
because that seems like that would be totally even better.
This is one of the big draws for us is we wanted to do this. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Well, that's exciting.
Yes, and that kind of thing is kind of built into the way that the thing is going to be structured, is my understanding, is that there will be time and space for people to organize those kinds of things and network with other podcasts. There might be other podcasts that you listen to that might be there. You can check the list when you go to the registration page. But we're really excited for that to be there and to participate. But Christy, that's a great idea. And that's also something. So let us know if you have registered for this gathering. Do let us know.
Yes.
And as it gets closer,
I'm just going to gravitycommons.com.
Pick my favorite brewery or my favorite coffee shop and say, this is where we're meeting at this time. And then everybody just show up.
Okay. That sounds good. Christy's going to organize the meet and greet. The meet and greet.
Hang out.
Yeah.
All right.
Anyway, so that's an exciting thing that we hope you join us for.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. Well, what are we doing? Who's on the podcast today?
Oh, yes. Elizabeth Oldfield. Okay, you guys. There are a few times when we like interview people and I walk away going, man, like that was actually probably just for me more than any other. I mean, I think our listeners are going to love this, but I'm telling you personally, there was something that happened there. She tells a story about how her mom responds to her stealing chips.
Yes.
And this picture of God to me has actually stuck to my heart for weeks. I mean, we recorded it weeks ago and I'm telling you, there was a shift in my thinking and it was really good for me. And so she wrote this book Fully Alive, and actually Matt, you sent it to me because, I had not fully read it. Full disclosure, because you led the whole thing, but Tending to the Souls in Turbulent Time. And, man, it was powerful for me. So I'm excited for our listeners to hear this.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. It was a really sweet conversation and I'm excited.
All right.
Well. I am too. I really loved it. Loved the interview. And I had the same kind of experience as you, Christy, just sort of I experienced what I would call the Holy Spirit ministering to me.
Yes, yes.
As she was talking and relaying those stories. And so, trust the same will be true of our listeners.
Yeah, our listeners are like, okay, get into it because we want to hear it now.
Come on.
All right.
Holy Spirit's waiting.
Let's dive in.
All right, here we go.
All right, friends, here we go.
Elizabeth Oldfield joins us today on the Gravity Commons podcast. She's the former director at the UK's leading religion and society think tank, Theos. She's appeared across the media, including BBC Radio and Television, Unheard, The Financial Times, CNN, The Guardian, and is a contributing editor at Comet Magazine. She also finds time to do coaching and consulting work while living in an intentional community with her husband and children in South London. We're chatting with Elizabeth today about her new book, Fully Alive, Tending to the Soul in Turbulent Times. Elizabeth, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
What do you mean by turbulent times? I feel like we're in Shangri-La right now. Everything is everything is so great.
Definitely overreacting. it's funny how, depending on who you say that to, and it's a real generational difference actually, who you say it to, people are like, oh, yes. And other people are like, well, you know, there's always challenges. yes, I have a friend who's a very nerdy philosopher, and he likes this term polycrisis or metacrisis. And it is hard to know how much is our information environment, how much is there's just things we never would have known about in a different information environment. Discerning whether our times are actually more turbulent and unsettling than other times is maybe a fool's errand, but it's certainly the ambient story, and that forms us and affects us. And I wanted to think seriously about it.
Yes, this is maybe apropos of very little, but I was reading a book today about Jonathan Edwards and his book he published on Abigail Hutchinson that sparked the Great Awakening. And in this book, it talked about how that accounting of Abigail Hutchinson's conversion and death became one of the first sort of mass-produced current event publications in the United States. We're talking like 1730s. Because most books weren't able to be mass-produced and disseminated very quickly. And so a lot of books then you were reading history. But in the 1730s, with engineering and the economy, you had sort of the advent of people knowing about what's happening not in my area. And as you were talking about turbulent times, I mean, I'm thinking about even this morning as I scrolled my news feeds, reading about Israel and Palestine, reading about Ukraine and Russia, reading about, we have a trial going on here with a presidential candidate for 2024, reading about the fallout still from Brexit, reading about cancer in the royal family, like all of these things going on. And my body feels incapable of metabolizing and caring about it all. So when I read the word turbulent, I think part of it is the present political economy makes it really difficult for me to be settled, present, and available to what's immediately around me. Could you speak a bit about that? How our bodies maybe aren't even designed to handle the pace of the modern life?
Yeah. Yeah, I feel it even as you were speaking. And the language I often use to myself about it is, where are you going to steady your soul? Where are you going to root yourself and get to that place of kind of a sense of inner home, because that is the only place from which we're of any use in times like that. And the threat response that we are triggered into by difference and division, and also by fear, also by the sense like I should be doing something, that somehow my anxiety is the correct or moral or righteous response to this absolute fire hose of negative information, which we are sticking our face in far too much of the day. You put it beautifully. Like, the question that I began asking was, you know, I don't want to be a disengaged citizen. I don't want to not care about the pain of people around the world. I don't want to pretend that climate change isn't happening. But actually, I'm probably more use working out how to love my immediate neighbor and like grow beetroot to share with them and be as like peaceful a presence as I can in my community, so that I can be someone who can cross divides and draw people together. And that, like, yeah, it's such a sort of like Wendell Berry turn. What does it mean to, yes, have part of our brain paying attention to where things are going, but most of our heart and our mind paying most attention to the people in front of us and our neighborhood and the work that we have been given to do from our vocation, not out of fear or duty or performing for other people?
Yeah. Yeah, I think this is directly connected to your title, Fully Alive. In some ways, this book is kind of a memoir of how you have found your way into that. And I wonder if you could tell us, what meaning are you invoking? What quality of life are you invoking by this phrase, fully alive? And why is that so compelling to you?
Honestly, I think part of it's just personality. I am one of those annoying Enneagram people. I am an Enneagram 7. you could put it in Myers-Briggs world or some more like psychologically robust thing with the like big five psychological traits around openness and extroversion and all those kind of thing. Whether you do the folk wisdom version or whatever, I don't think it matters. I'm someone who really wants to experience things, right? I want a level of intensity in my life and meaning and depth and probably slightly too easily bored. And I have high risk tolerance, right? I'm not predominantly motivated by security. So a lot, some of it's just like that weird basic accident of temperament. I hope some of it is also some deep theological commitments about life in all its fullness. You know, this tradition, which I sort of fell into and then fell out of and then have found my way back into again. It's one of the things that Jesus promises, right? That's what he is, that's his mission. That's his vocation. Yeah. Yeah. That's the work that was his to do, is to bring life in all its fullness. And that's for us. And if I'm not living in something that feels fully alive, then have I even understood what this thing is? You know, am I just going through some sort of motions? Yeah, and there's more I can say about it, but I think those are the two sorts of basic drivers.
Yeah.
We'll be right back.
Ben, you know what I love?
What?
My wife. My wife. But I also love theology and beer, and that's why we're excited to talk about Theology Beer Camp 2024.
Yes. Yes, it is a conference. It's a gathering in Denver, Colorado, October 17th through 19th that we got invited to participate in as a podcast. There's a whole bunch of podcasts that are going to be there. It's put on by Trip Fuller and Homebrewed Christianity. And it's going to be a great gathering, Matt.
Yeah.
We're going to hear from Ilya Delio. We're going to hear from Brian McLaren.
Tom Ord.
Butler Bass.
Yep.
Tom Ord. Brian Zond. Lots of other folks. So yeah, we're excited to gather with you all.
We wanted to find some time to get together, and we're really happy to be invited into this, and we can invite you to join us here, because I know many of you listen to our podcast, but you listen to lots of others as well, and there's, I don't know, 30 or 40 podcasts are going to be there, probably many that you already listen to, some you don't, but you'll be introduced to. So if you go to gravitycommons.com/theologycamp and enter the code GravityHobbit, you get $25 off. What a bargain.
Incredible bargain. I hope to see you there. Again, it's October 17 through 19 in Denver, Colorado. gravitycommons.com/theologycamp and use the code GravityHobbit to get $25 off tickets.
Yep, join us. This month's online learning community is on reconstructing the gospel of Jesus. We're talking about how his gospel of participation, how he participates in our humanity, and then we get to participate in the divinity of Christ and God and the Godhead himself. This is an ongoing series that we've done every fourth Wednesday. This month, it's on June 26th. If you go to the URL gravitycommons.com/reconstructing, you can sign up for a premium membership of our Commons community and get access to all the past classes we've done, all the past learning communities, or you can buy this just as a one-off, pay what you can, pay what you want to come and join us. Even if you can't join live, you'll get a recording. This class has been incredible. We've been reconstructing what is the gospel that Jesus proclaimed, and this is the penultimate. That's one of Ben's favorite words. This is the penultimate learning community. So join us for this. I'm very excited. Ben and I will be in Louisville for this learning community. So we may even be on the same screen hanging out.
Who knows? Yeah. Yeah. You'll know that we're both real people at that point. So not AI.
This
sense of your imagination.
This learning community is actually coming out of what we've heard listener feedback about how the Gravity Commons podcast has been so encouraging, and people want more theology, more Bible stuff, and to dive deeper in reconstructing a livable faith. So this learning community is all about reconstructing a faith that is worth believing, worth living in 21st century. So join us Wednesday night, June 26th, 8 p.m. Eastern, for this learning community.
Yep. Again, you can go to gravitycommons.com/reconstructing to find the two different ways that you can register there. And this is like a big Zoom call, essentially. There's some teaching, but then there's a lot of time for Q&A, for people to post things either in the chat or to unmute themselves. And so
it's a really fun way to see faces and have some community around learning. That's why we call it a learning community.
Yeah. So let's learn together.
Let's get back to the show.
We have a high Enneagram tolerance on this podcast.
I thought you might.
Yeah, because we're kind of nerds about it ourselves. We don't talk about it as much as we used to. But I wonder, this question's been, I guess, just percolating as we've started this interview. Because I read the news feeds and I feel that temptation to withdraw. And also the anxiety about, oh, I shouldn't do that. Like, I need to stay, engaged. And so I love what you said about, being fully alive and being fully present and available to my immediate neighbors, where I can actually make a difference. How do you tell the difference? I mean, going back to Enneagram 7, in a healthy way, they are wanting to sort of experience life in all its fullness. But like the unhealthy side of that, right, is just the pure avoidance of pain. Mm-hmm. And how do you tell the difference between a life that is sort of well-disciplined to be fully alive and a life that is just trying to numb all these external inputs that are causing me anxiety? Mm. Does that make sense? That question makes sense?
Yeah. Yeah. And that has basically been the project of my soul work and my writing for the last 5 years, I would say. Mm. Mm. I came to this realization. I was talking to my spiritual director. I came to this realization that it was really not part of my self-identification, and I was quite annoyed with it. But that I am actually, if I let myself be, quite an anxious person, mm-hmm. and but that I was anxious because I was not at all comfortable with fear, with sadness or anger.
Yeah.
And the scriptures that I am trying to pattern my life around are extremely comfortable with sadness and anger in a way that I think we as Christians struggle to take seriously, or some bits of the church do.
Sure.
That it's sort of the opposite of stoicism. It is real emotional range. It's an incredibly emotional story with an incredibly emotional God, right? A Jesus who experiences sadness, anger, who has the full range of human emotions. And I was, in my quest to really only have the positive emotions, shutting down sadness and anger, but then just covering everything with this layer of ambient anxiety that I was not really looking directly in the eye. Mm. And the process of letting myself actually feel how turbulent the context is, like not denying climate change, not denying how capable humans are of cruelty and how complicit I am in structures of injustice, felt like a really necessary part of my growing up. And the joy is it was all there. It was like, actually, that this story can hold this. It always could. Mm. This path is for this. And that when I am not resisting anger and sadness, then in these rhythms, and psychologists talk about it as like, feel your hard feelings and they will move through you. Yeah. But it's all there in the Psalms.
Right.
down and the up. It's not like psychologists are telling us something the Bible doesn't know. Like,
right.
Grieve and rage. And then you come through as like, where is my hope? Mm. Lift up your soul. But you can't do that first. You have to go down.
And you can't, that's really profound, Elizabeth. I thank you for sharing that. Because I think the fear that you've articulated is in so many of us, that we're going to be overwhelmed. Ultimately, I think it's a fear of death. It's a fear of ceasing to exist, that we're going to be overwhelmed by these feelings. Mm-hmm. And I love the good news that you proclaimed to us there, that this story that we have, that we've been handed, that we've been given, can actually hold us. and can hold the grief and the sadness and the anger of the world, and gives us hope on the other side of it. But we can't, you know, we don't, there's no guarantees about that as we go into it. And so it is a fearful experience. But I thank you for bearing witness to what that experience is like.
Yeah, you guys are speaking my language, emotions and all the things. It's like my favorite. I think partly because it is so difficult. You know, we've talked about this, but in my dissertation, it's noticing, naming, and navigating your emotions, the comfortable and the uncomfortable ones. And it's so difficult. We notice it, but we don't want to name it. Like we can see how uncomfortable we feel when we read through the news thread and all of these things, but to actually do the work to dig down to figure out what am I actually feeling? It's not just anxiety. It's probably fear or grief or, you know, whatever, anger. And then really, anyway, navigating it. So anyway, I appreciate it. I could talk. I need to come to South London and we need to have tea and
get
all
around
the things.
My table, come to the
That's
chapel.
Right. That's right. We need more than a few hours, though, I think. So I am curious, you know, many of us have grown up as Christians carrying around this definition that kind of focuses our behavior on laws. You know, sin is missing the mark, and the mark is God's standard, God's will. And you explore a deeper sense in your book, and you use the work of in I and thou. And so how did you come to understand sin, and what does this understanding of sin really open up for you?
Yeah, I was pretty nervous about it. I mean, I was pretty nervous about this whole project. It took a huge amount of cheerleading from my community. Because I'm not a theologian, right? I'm an ordinary Christian who studied some theology, and in some ways all Christians are theologians. This is just like thinking about God, right? But the hard-wired of getting it wrong was pretty present in me as I came to say, the work that is mine to do is to translate some of this treasure for those beyond the church who have heard some terrible messages about what it means and try and explain why I think there is sources of fully aliveness here. Mm-hmm. And the idea that sin is not a cosh to beat people with or like naughtiness, like, you know, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, lingerie shop, but like deep tragedy and disconnection is, I sort of came to this realization that that's how I think about it. It's why I don't find the concept of putting, it names a reality that I see in myself, my tendency to disconnect from my own soul and what it's longing for, from other people and their needs and how inconvenient they are and how they call into question my like main character energy, and from God, you know? This pulling, Luther and Augustine talk about homo incurvatus in se, which is man, but humanity turned in on themselves, in on ourselves, like an ingrowing toenail. And so this sense that actually in losing the language of sin culturally, in the UK at least, we'd lost something that these other frameworks, you know, as you can tell, I'm interested in psychology and attachment theory and there's all these, I don't want to denigrate the other disciplines that we use to understand ourselves, but actually humans as prone to disconnection in need of help to move towards our own souls and other people and the created world actually, and God. It just felt very true and humane and gave me more to work with actually.
Yeah.
Because it always comes with the possibility of forgiveness and grace and restoration. And then you can reconnect and reconnect and reconnect. And you reference Martin Buber, who is this beautiful Jewish philosopher. It's Jewish theologian, essentially, although people really focus on the first two-thirds of I, Thou, which is the book that I'm drawing on so deeply, which is about connections between human beings. And they don't like the final third, which is about I, Thou moments with God and basically about worship. But yeah, his framing, he has this phrase, all living is meeting. Basically, the moments when we really see each other in either connection, that's all that's really real. That's all that really life is. That's life. That's fully aliveness. And sin is all the things that get in the way of that. Mm. And that just really redeemed and transformed my understanding of that element of my tradition and made me fall in love with it again.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I think it's the connection and the being created for relationship. You know, it's not good for humans to be alone. Once we situate sin within a relational conceptual world versus a legal conceptual world, I actually think Christianity becomes way more compelling to people who know existentially that they're alone or lonely or need human connection. Mm. Speaking of like knowing the things that are wrong, you choose to structure this book around the seven deadly sins, as they're called. And you sort of tackle one in each chapter. They are wrath, avarice, asadia, envy, gluttony, lust, and pride. And we can't get to each one, I think, in this interview. We'll do one or two maybe. But by way of introduction, how did you come to write a book about human flourishing via the seven deadly sins?
I'm going to be extremely honest with you because it is one of my values. I didn't start with it. I have a very wonderful agent who is not at all, would not just self-describe as Christian or religious in any way. And God bless her, liked my voice. And we were working on a different project together and it didn't go anywhere. And then she said, what do you really want to write? And I was like, Sophie, you're never going to be able to sell this book. I want to write about the treasures of theology for people beyond the church. But, you know, that's no good for you. She was like, maybe there's a moment. You know, if anyone can do it, you can do it, which was so encouraging. And so I wrote the beginning of some essays, and one of them was about attention, and one of them was about what I think is life-giving in the Christian sexual ethic, and one of them was about the nonviolent tradition and how we cross divides and how so much of that comes from the New Testament. And so the book sort of emerged, but I didn't. And then she said, "What, you need a framing structure. What's your framing structure?" And I had one of the essays was about recapturing sin, and I was suddenly like, "Oh, it's this and this concept." Although it's slightly, you know, as I say in the book, it's slightly weird. It's not sort of a concept that's actually very in use amongst most Christians, but it is very familiar in the culture, and it gives something people to kind of grab onto and be like, "Okay, I roughly know what this is going to be about." They probably don't, but at least they might start reading.
And now, a word from a sponsor.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. You know when you're really stressed or not feeling so great about your life or about yourself? Talking to someone who understands can really help. But who is that person? How do you find them? Where do you even start? Talkspace. Talkspace makes it easy to get the support you need. With Talkspace, you can go online, answer a few questions about your preferences, and be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, wherever you feel most at ease. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or if you want some counseling for you and your partner, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members only pay a $25 copay or less. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off of your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
All right, let's get back into our conversation.
I love it that a non-Christian helped you write a book for non-Christians.
I needed her.
Which is goes back to this connection that we're created for connection, and that this book, it was a generative process so that she helped you understand what she needed from this book and others like her. The words like avarice and asadia, we don't use those words in the States very much. I don't know if they're still in use in the UK, but you know, avarice is a word for greed. Rapacious greed, you know. And the subtitles of each chapter really help people understand the telos or the trajectory towards flourishing. And your subtitle, I think, of this chapter is particularly creative. And the subtitle is From Stuffication to Gratitude and Generosity. Can you speak a bit about this? And I was, as I read it, I was thinking about your intentional community as it relates to generosity and gratitude. And I wonder if your intentional community has taught you anything about being fully alive, moving from stuffocation to gratitude and generosity.
Yeah, vast amounts. We don't use the word avarice that much either, but it, you know, it's very telling that the word greed is mainly associated with food. You know, don't be greedy. And I was addressing kind of numbing and addictive behaviors in the chapter on gluttony, but avarice is specifically material greed. And it, honestly, it was the hardest chapter to write by a long way, because as soon as I started reading and thinking, I was like, oh my goodness, my complicity, my hypocrisy, in comparison to what my tradition actually teaches about money and economic injustice, was just like, I could barely look at it. Most of the chapter was me being like, I know, this is hard. Like, keep going, we can do it. It feels like the huge missing bit, but the huge gap between what the Christian tradition could be and is, because it's startling how strong a focus the Bible has on money compared to on other subjects. Like, more 2,000 verses on money, like 200 on prayer, something ridiculous. Like, I can't remember that second number, but it's there's more. There's many more on money. There's vastly more than on sex. And that's not to say prayer and sex are not important parts of our tradition, but the amount of time and energy we spend thinking about money compared to those other things. We moved into a small intentional community. I sort of joke about it being a micro monastery for a lot of reasons. And some of them were just, we couldn't afford to stay in London. We felt called to the city, but we needed to think creatively. It was a response to climate anxiety and a sense of the crisis of loneliness and disconnection. And how could we be some use in these times? But the process of pooling your resources with other people really brings a lot of unsaid things about money to the surface. And like learning to live a bit more simply, we don't buy furniture. We get it gifted off the street or from neighbors or occasionally secondhand. You know, we try and source our food in ways that are a bit more humane and relational, from co-ops and local places and from waste food and all those kind of things. And then we try and give things away and just have as much of a kind of open-handed gift economy posture as we can. And you know what? We have to keep relearning it. Since I wrote the book, I think we've got less good at it. And so now that I'm talking about the book, I'm like, oh, we need to go back. We need to go back to these practices. It's so hard to stay loyal to your values. Like, we need stronger scaffolding for this one. We need reminders up. We need to talk about it, because we've forgotten that we want to be giving as much away as is coming into the house. It feels like all of my acts of resistance to my avarice feel so tiny and weak compared to the onslaught of a system.
Yes.
That's just like, buy stuff.
Yes. Elizabeth, I think that's one of the major awakenings I've had in the last 10 to 20 years, is that to be a Christian is to live a life of resistance. Because Christendom, I think one of the implicit promises of Christendom is that things are ordered and shaped and normed in a way that are conducive to the Christian life. And, you know, I think avarice is one of the ways of naming sort of the cancerous-like appetite that our economy has for more, that then it's like a contagion. It infests us as well. And I think unless we are sober-minded and fully awake, we will be caught up in that, like I mentioned, that rapacious, cancerous accumulation of more. And that's hard. Mm. I think that's hard for us, you know, to be awake and committed to resistance as a way of life, because it feels like it's hard work.
Yeah. No?
It's the narrow way, right? That the promise was never that this would be easy. Yeah. But it's sort of both. Like, there's a paradox in it, in that every time I've gone, okay, I really do want to take this tradition seriously and see how much of my weight it can bear. I feel more human. Like, it's not more comfortable or more convenient at all. But it does feel more human, and it feels more aligned with the longings of my soul, which is to live life that's meaningful and congruent and oriented outward. And navigating where the boundaries around that are, and like, what is actual a life of simplicity and generosity, and what some sort of like performative virtue signaling or savior syndrome, or, you know, our motivations are so muddy, but the key piece of it is when I'm doing it whilst, and that's sort of Christian jargon, but while trying to stay in step with the spirit, like when I'm doing it because I am actually spending enough time in silence and I am listening and I am receiving what I need. And when my like existential cravings, which I am tempted to meet in buying more stuff or doom scrolling or performing success or whatever all these idols are, when I'm getting those needs met from where they're supposed to be met, from divine love, then letting go of the idols doesn't feel like you're sort of clawing things out of my goblin hands. It's a bit easier to be like, yeah, that's not doing me any good.
Yeah.
That's really challenging.
Yeah, I think.
To be clear, there is a lot of work to be done. Yeah.
I think one of the things that's helpful for me in what you're saying, Elizabeth, though, is that it is challenging, but it's challenging because just that story about how to be fully alive, to use the title of your book, that story, like there's this, like the reason these idols feel powerful is that story is just all around us, has been cultivated for years, you know, all of that kind of thing. And so we are learning to disbelieve lies about how to be fully alive. Right. And the goal, I've found it really helpful for me anyway, when I do find myself, you know, enmeshed in idolatrous pursuits, I used to feel like just really, really bad about myself when that would happen. But I think it's been a grace for me to realize what I'm pursuing, even when I get all tangled up, what I'm pursuing is abundant life. It's to be fully alive. I'm mistaken about how to get there. And I'm learning to trust Jesus, you know, that it's not, you know, in the accumulation of stuff. To return to Martin Buber, it's like it's in the quality of this connection that I can cultivate with God and with other people. And that's where to find that. I don't know if it helps me repent, not from a sense of like what an idiot sinner I am, but more of a, I'm mistaken, like most of us are.
Yeah.
And I just need to trust Jesus again.
Forgive me, Ben.
That's okay.
I tell a story in the chapter on gluttony about being caught stealing food and coming home from a horrible day at school and stealing crisps and sitting on the toilet thinking that I'd locked the door, just like cramming crisps into my mouth, like desperate to numb my feelings, and my mum opening the door and the shame of it.
Oh yeah.
The like, oh, she has very sort of dysfunctional relationship with food inherited. So there's all that stuff in there.
Yeah.
But she just said, it's all right, sweetheart. You don't need to hide. You don't need to steal food. You probably just need a hug. Wow. And I feel like that is the voice of divine love so often.
Yes.
Like God catches us cramming our mouths with sweets or stuff or using porn or bitching and resenting and sniping or whatever it is we're doing to make ourselves feel better. It's like, it's all right, sweetheart. You don't need that thing. Put it down. Come and have a cuddle. And then we can change, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah. I'm going to start imagining God in your voice now, Elizabeth, inviting me to come and have a cuddle.
I would just...
And that's all the time we have for today.
just something about a good Britishism.
It's so good.
You should say kutch. I have lovely Welsh friends. Welsh people.
I've never heard that word. A kutch.
Come and have a kutch. Welsh people give you a kutch.
Okay.
So nice.
Man. Well, Elizabeth, at the end of your book, you explore how one can find their way back into faith by experiencing God, like having this cuddle, knowing the divine love. And I think for many of our listeners, you know, they're what does it look like to kind of hold faith and doubt at the same time? And they're struggling with that and trying to figure out ways that Christianity can go beyond just being left brain. And so I wonder if you could just invite us more into that, into a way of knowing God really in that and holding both of those things.
Yeah, that's a really deep question. But I think, you know, the whole thing started for me with this ecstatic experience. And if it was just a set of ideas, like I actually think they're really good ideas. They're really good for us, right? They're useful. But if it's just that, it's probably not enough for me. And pursuing encounter with capital L love, which is sort of my favorite way of talking about God at the moment, we can do that even when we don't know if we believe in capital L love. And I think I have just come to much, and it is partly through this understanding of brain hemispheres that you alluded to, this different forms of attention and the work of Ian McGilchrist, that actually left hemispheric ways of seeing the world, we've been told that that's how you get to capital T truth. But that's the story is much more complicated than that. And the right hemispheric forms of attention and ways of knowing that sit in intuition and imagination and creativity and faith, both neurologically and I would say theologically, are the most, the ways, the those forms of knowing and attention actually give us a more accurate picture of the world as it really is. And the left hemisphere is supposed to like do discrete tasks and then report back. Ian's book's called The Master and His Emissary. And we have created a society which flips that. And so that really, that very small idea really liberated me to go, I'm not giving up on my intellect if I feel I just need to actually immerse myself in ritual or use my body in worship and let myself be formed imaginatively by this story. And even if the bit of like the hypercritical, hyper-skeptical bit of me is going, frankly, this is all BS. Mm-hmm. I can be like, maybe it is, but it's possible that there's something I'm not seeing. And if I let myself grow and develop in these other ways of knowing and being and seeing, I will get a wider view of reality as it is. And it may be that love, capital L love, is, I was going to say, part of that picture, like the frame of that picture. I sort of land it with Pascal, whose Pascal's Wager is not at all what I thought it was. For people who were like, actually, I'd really like to believe and I don't, or I used to believe and I don't, or I don't know. Just sort of say, try and relax about that.
Right.
Be like, okay, don't panic. That's all right. That happens to all of us.
Yeah.
Just keep walking this path. Keep being in this tradition. It's more likely to form you into the kind of person that you want to be than like giving up on it.
Yeah.
Keep going. Things might come back into focus and it would probably be more of an adventure anyway.
Yeah.
I hope people
appreciate that.
Yeah, I do too. I hope people hear that as permission. Mm-hmm. I think one of the things that makes that cohere, Elizabeth, is having a community that non-anxiously embodies that for each other, rather than a community of people where the demand is, you know, certitude, where you have to hide doubt, where you have to pretend and pose, and you can't be right where you really are. I think that your book is an invitation into befriending these spaces in our lives that are dark or disconnected. And in those dark, disconnected places, there are portals into this capital L love that you're talking about. The title again is Fully Alive, Tending to the Soul in Turbulent Times. Elizabeth, I know you're really busy and you have a podcast that you host. We didn't even mention. maybe tell us a little about that podcast and how people can connect with you, maybe if they want to read more about what you've written.
Thank you. Yeah, my podcast is called The Sacred, and I speak to people from all different backgrounds, positions, perspectives, politically, religiously, professionally, about their deep values. So really an exercise in deep listening across difference, and an attempt to model what it might look like to be empathetic and curious, people not like ourselves. And it is drawing deeply on my understanding of the Christian nonviolent tradition and our calling, but it's not specifically for, you know, guests come from all different perspectives and listeners, listeners too. And the next series will be sort of lightly themed around the books. So that's a heads up. And I write at More Fully Alive on Substack. And you can find me on the terrible social media platforms that I worry are curdling my soul and occasionally drop out of. Yes. But yeah, I'm very findable, and I love being in conversation with people. So get in touch if you have any questions.
Yeah. Elizabeth, thanks for being our guest today.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been delightful.
I'm keenly aware that we only really talked about one of the seven deadly sins. And one of the ones we didn't get into that I'll just name for our listeners. There's obviously seven. That should be apparent because it's right there on the title. But one of the ones we didn't get into is her chapter on gluttony. And the subtitle is From Numbing to Ecstasy. And I think from my life, I've particularly had this nascent, like, kind of understanding of gluttony, which is it's eating too much. And the way you know you're gluttonous is if you're overweight. Like, I didn't choose to believe that. That's just something I carry in my body.
And the way that,
It's just sort of like this assumption I've had that I've had to actually mine out. I've actually had to become aware of it in order to name it and notice it. But she describes gluttony as the process of inappropriate relationship to the consumption of things to numb our experience of reality. And I just find that so helpful.
Yeah.
Obviously, it has some, there's some conceptual overlaps to avarice, what we talked about. I just find it so helpful to expand our awareness and the possibility of meeting God in those, in the spaces where we don't want to feel, Christy, and then in the spaces where what we use to avoid feeling.
Yeah, I think that's very compelling for me as well. And this gets to some of what she shared, you know, early on in the podcast, just about being an Enneagram 7 and just the difference between true ecstasy. I love that word. And she mentioned she had this ecstatic experience. Like, there, yep. the difference between true ecstasy and the mere numbing of pain. You know, like numbing negativity is not the same as ecstasy. And I'm reminded, you know, of that C.S. Lewis quote where he talks about, you know, the Lord finding our desires not too strong, but too weak, that we're satisfied far too easily. You know, that we've been invited to this vacation at the sea and we're like, nah, I think I'll make, you know, mud pies because I don't really understand what that means. You know, like, this is fine. This is ecstasy. And God's actually inviting us into something far deeper. We just have to, you know, we just have to put down the donut.
Right.
And go with it.
And even the picture of just come and have a cuddle.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
It's nice, like, actually what we really are longing for, what our souls are really needing is to know what she says, you know, capital L love. Yeah. And that sounds churchy right now as I'm saying it, but gosh, when she was talking, I was like, yes. Like, I need that. And I need to be reminded of that. And when I don't believe that is when I am eating the candy bar on the toilet type thing. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
In my life.
Crisps on the toilet. Yeah. I thought that was just such a great image of repentance, really. Repentance is put down the chips and come and have a cuddle. That's not what you need right now. Mm. There's just so much grace in that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So good.
Yeah.
I want to go to South London now, y'all.
London. Yep. Now we have to make another trip.
I've been secretly planning a little trip in my mind to go see my favorite band, who's based in England, and they don't tour outside of England. And
that you got me.
They got
on
a new
too.
Album coming out in June. I just can't afford a flight to and from England.
I'm following them because of you, Matt. So maybe what it should just be a family trip.
Or do you really like Heiliger?
I totally do. And I listened whenever they're like, hey, we just put out a new single. I'm like, yes, yes, you did. And nobody else knows about who they are. And I'm like, I think they're brilliant.
Yes, they are brilliant. Oh, Chrissy, I'm so excited that you're a fan. Okay, well, now maybe it's a Penley Tebby family trip to England.
Yep.
And we'll have 10 people rolling their eyes and 2 people out of their minds excited.
Yes. Yes, sounds good.
They could go do some. There's plenty to do in England. You know, you two could go to the show, and they could, you know, I don't know.
They can go on the eye.
Do something
they could,
touristy.
They could, yeah, you know, take a little trip.
Paul and Christy could take all the kids to a Liverpool game.
Oh, well, now I want to go on the trip. So, although Liverpool's not in London, of course, but, you know, England's a small country.
All this talk about England reminds me, Christy, what did the Frenchman say to the other Frenchman?
I don't know. What did the Frenchman say to the other Frenchman?
I don't know. I don't speak French.
Oh, my goodness.
They were talking and...
Yeah, it was just a genuine a question. Yeah. Like, do you speak French? Do you know what they said?
No, nope. They don't.
I have no idea. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's it. That's it.
Oh, man. Y'all, it's always good to be with you. Even at the end, when you give me a bad joke.
Even at the end.
Even at the end.
Yep. Here at the end of all things.
That joke works for any country, really. Burundi.
Right.
Madagascar.
Any country where they speak a language that you don't speak.
Slovenia. Slovakia. Yep. All the Slavs. All right, listener. Good to be with you. Virtually.
Yep.
Audibly.
Yes.
And we'll be back next week.
Yeah. Lord, see you next time. Thanks for joining us for this episode of the Gravity Podcast. If you're finding it helpful, please tell your friends about it. Word of mouth is the best advertising. Ratings and reviews online also help others find the podcast. And don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss an episode. To join discussions about the podcast and lots more, join us in the Gravity Commons. It's free to join, and you can connect with other listeners to the podcast to talk about faith, spirituality, and whatever else comes up. To join, go to gravitycommons.com/community. The Gravity Podcast is produced by Ben Sturkey and Matt Tebby. Aaron Sturkey edits and mixes the podcast. You can check out his mixing, engineering, and production work at aaronsturkey.com. We'd love to hear from you. To record a question or a comment for us, go to gravitycommons.com/message and click Start Recording button. You can also email us at podcast@gravitycommons.com. Catch you next time.